Well, I invite you back to the book of Ecclesiastes one last time as I bring to a close this series on developing a God-focused life. I'll be at the tail end of chapter 11 and then going into chapter 12 if you want to turn there. And while you're on your way there, to save myself getting into trouble, let me remind you this Thursday night is a benefit concert for Alternatives and the Gospel Mission, 7 o'clock at Haven Reformed Church. And we've always had a pretty good crowd for that. And so if you're free Thursday night, would like to be a part of that concert and part of that benefit, we would love to have you join us for that. Haven Church up on Sprinkle Road, Thursday night, 7 o'clock. Most of you are familiar with Warren Wiersbe. His preaching and his books have been a source of rich blessing and encouragement and exhortation to Christians for many decades now. He's been a blessing to me and encouragement to me through all my adult life. Because of age and health, he doesn't travel much anymore, but thankfully he's still writing. But were it not for the providence and grace of God, we wouldn't have his ministry to have been blessed by. Back in 1966, he was almost killed when a drunk driver careened around a corner at 80 to 90 miles an hour and hit his car head on. His wife was his passenger. Both of them were seriously injured. But he said that during his time in the intensive care unit, as well as his recuperation at home, were great times of reflection and pondering. And he said that it made him a firm believer in Deuteronomy 33, verse 25, "As your days, so shall your strength be." He also said that, "When I awaken early each morning, I thank God for a new day, and I ask Him to help me use it wisely for His glory and to enjoy it as His gift." And certainly God has used him as a gift to us, and I trust that the Lord will give him even a few more years yet to be that blessing. But I think any person who has come close to not seeing the next day certainly would share that same habit of thanking the Lord every day for a new day, this gift that he has given to us. Or as Moses told us in Psalm 90, verse 12, "So teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom." Moses knew the importance of that, to know that each day we want to have count for God's glory and to use it wisely and apply our hearts in the way that he would have us apply it. That brings us into our text today in the book of Ecclesiastes, as Solomon has a special message at this conclusion of his journal. He has a message here that really is for all ages, but he speaks most directly to those who are young. And he's imparting to us the wisdom that he has gained and the things that he has learned through his own mistakes and failures and carelessness in the latter part of his life. And now as he comes toward the end, he's able to reflect on that, and he has some deep regret, but he's discovered also the futility of things in life. And so he has wise counsel to impart to those who are young. And he's teaching us at any age, really, as he has throughout the course of his writings here, that there is joy and there is meaning in our lives that can be and should be discovered. And so the words that he's going to share here are important words, words that must be heard and must be heeded as well. And so let's just dive into the text and look at what he has to say. I'm beginning at verse 9 of chapter 11. "Rejoice, young man, during your childhood, and let your heart be pleasant during the days of young manhood. And follow the impulses of your heart and the desires of your eyes. Yet know that God will bring you to judgment for all these things." Obviously, he's speaking to young people here. And although he addresses a young man, we can apply this to young ladies as well. Those who are in the great days of their youth, he has some counsel for you. And really, the counsel applies to any of us. My slides are real simple today. I just have three slides, or one slide with 3 points on it. But the first point that Solomon makes is to rejoice in your youth. That's what he says at the beginning. Rejoice, young man, during your childhood, during the days when you're young. I don't know who originally made the statement, but my father-in-law always said, youth is wasted on the young. And it's a good point. And those of us who are older, that's the way we think. And we know that, because we know that by the time we're mature enough to appreciate our youth, we don't have it anymore. It goes by much too quickly. I couldn't help but think of the country song by Brad Paisley that was popular just a couple of years ago called Letters to Me. And it's a song that's really a ballad about himself as an adult, wishing he could write a letter back to himself when he was 17. And while I can't agree with every statement that he makes, but the point that he is making in the song is a good one. He's writing back to himself, and as if he's 17, and he's reading this letter from himself, who's in his 30s now. But he's telling him all about these issues of life that are so dramatic and so important to you right now, and our life and death, it seems. Really, when you grow up and get older, they're not as important anymore. And you look back and you'll see that that crisis really wasn't that big of a crisis. With some exceptions, there are certainly some things that are major, and they are issues that affect our lives at youth. But there are other things that are the end of the world for us, but really when you get beyond that stage, they're not. But the point here is God wants you to enjoy the days of your youth. He really does. Because life is short, and youth is a short period of time. It's just this little fraction on the chart of your whole entire life. And these years are going to be gone before you know it. Every now and then, my wife Beth will make a comment to me how she misses the days when our girls were teenagers and all of their girl teenage friends would crash over at our house and carry on like typical teenage girls and laughing, and then all of their other issues that they deal with. And she'll tell me how much she misses those days of having all those girls around and listening to them talk. And I'll murmur something like, yeah, and all the drama that came with them. And she'll say, I know, but I still miss those times. It was just so much fun, just listening to them talk and have conversation with them. I didn't remember that part because I believe I probably left the room and headed to the basement or somewhere to watch a football game. But those girls are in their mid-30s now with kids of their own, a couple of who will be teenagers themselves in just a few short years. But these should be good days of our life, of your life. Ours are gone for those of us who are older. And so I guess a tip that I throw in here as you think about this counsel, it would be don't try to grow up too fast. By that I don't mean act like an immature idiot as long as you can. That wears out after a while. But I mean enjoy the age you are without always trying to be older than you are, because you'll get there quick enough. But you know how it works. When they're 14, they want to be 16. When they're 16, they want to be 18. When they're 18, they want to be 21. But somewhere along the way, that reverses itself, and you start trying to go the other direction, and you can't do anything about that. But the point just is, enjoy your youth while you have it, because it's going to be gone before you know it, and you'll be looking back over your shoulder and wondering, man, where did it go? And I'll just throw in a point here for parents, too. Since I have the floor, I'll say what I can. But as parents, let your kids be their age, you know? In other words, don't push them to grow up too fast. They'll get there before you know it. But, you know, let them be kids. If they're teens, let them be teens. And there'll be a lot of drama, and there'll be a lot of issues you'll have to deal with, but be patient. If you're dealing with that now, be patient. You'll get through this. I got through it with two girls, and I know all about the drama. But they'll get beyond it themselves. But at the same time, give them guidance. and give them the boundaries that they need. Be their parent, not just their pal. But now as we go back to what Solomon has to say to young people, he throws in this very serious word of caution. And the caution is, when Solomon here says, follow the impulses of your heart and the desires of your eyes, he's not suggesting that you go out and sow your wild oats while you're young, as that phrase goes. I don't know if they use that anymore. But he's saying, don't go out and indulge yourself in all of your fleshly desires and anything that you want to do, anything you lay your eyes on, go after it. That's why he quickly adds this statement. Yet know that God will bring you to judgment for all these things. He's just saying, know that there is accountability for your actions. So he's simply suggesting to us here that there are boundaries that we are to stay within while we're enjoying ourselves. These are God-ordained boundaries that are set for our protection. Now, God isn't trying to steal our happiness or be the eternal killjoy. No, quite the opposite. God is gracious and doesn't want us to live the rest of our lives with regret or shame. He doesn't want us to ruin our lives through poor choices or immoral conduct. And so he sets these boundaries of safety for us. Now, if that means staying within those boundaries makes you the unpopular kid, then so be it. One thing you will learn is after you graduate from high school, the whole popularity thing doesn't mean anything. In fact, in my experience, it was the unpopular kids that were the ones who became more successful than many of the others. But God is actually revealing a tremendous amount of compassion because he wants you to have fun. He wants you to be a crazy teenager if that's where you're at. He wants you to laugh. He wants you to enjoy your days, but just keep it safe and keep it pure before God because you'll have less of a mess to clean up or for somebody else to clean up. And you'll be much happier with happier memories. And remember, Solomon is speaking from his own experience. Someone who experimented with all of that stuff and tells us repeatedly, everything came up empty and futile. So the things that we think are going to bring satisfaction really don't. Well, let's move to the second word of counsel in verse 10. I've called it remove bitterness from your heart, but Solomon says, so remove grief and anger from your heart and put away pain from your body because childhood and the prime of life are fleeting. So grief and anger and pain. If you have an NIV, it says put away anxiety and troubles. King James says put away sorrow and evil. Those are not good things. And I know that those things actually come at us from two directions. One direction are things that we can't control, things that we didn't do anything to cause. So there will be times of grief or sorrow or things that will upset us. There will be these painful experiences of life that just happened to us. We didn't do anything. So in that case, he's saying, don't let those things turn to anger. Don't let them control you the way you respond to them. Now, the other direction where these things come from are our own choices. Things that we choose to do that result in pain or grief or sorrow. So another way to say this and to translate it, which would be a correct way to put it, would be put away rebellion from your heart. The bitterness of rebellion. And so it's when we respond incorrectly to these impulses of life or these experiences of life, it causes pain. But if we respond with anger, with bitterness, with grief, with rebellion, it only increases the pain even more. So he is essentially saying to us, don't allow yourself to become an angry, rebellious young person. That's just wise counsel that he's giving us. Now, I know there's a lot of pressure on kids these days, both academically and socially. And I know that our teens are facing things today, some challenges and some evils that most of us didn't have to when we were their age. There's some tough times. There's a whole sermon, I guess, we could do on this point, but I'll just leave it the way the text puts it. In those tough times, don't let anger and grief overtake you, because it will become destructive to yourself and potentially to others. The other option, as Solomon even tells us throughout his letter here, and even at the end of it, is to turn to God, the God who loves you, the God who does have a plan for your life, God who wants to protect you, and let him walk with you through those rough patches and through that white water of life, because he's the one who'll hold you up. And that's why Jesus said, take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. He wants to carry that burden for you if you'll let him. Well, there's a third avenue of counsel here, and as we get into chapter 12, and that is to remember your Creator while you're young. I'll just read the first two verses. Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near, when you will say, I have no delight in them. Before the sun and the light, the moon and the stars are darkened and the clouds return after the rain. Now he's talking about old age. Those are the evil days that he calls them. And if you want to know what that's like, talk to an older person. You'll discover, and we'll talk about some of that. He's going to describe that in a moment. But a key word here is the word remember. And that's an interesting word, because it really means more than just remember, like you would remember your friend's birthday or remember that you have a chemistry test coming up on Tuesday. The word remember is a word that really is more of a term that conveys action and commitment. It relates to where your focus is and the decisive actions that you take. The title of this series I've been doing these last five Sundays in Ecclesiastes is Developing a God-Focused Life. And that's important, because when we have a God-focused life, then that is going to translate itself into God-honoring positive actions. Things that will help us avoid the later regret or shame or embarrassment. This last week, our governor signed into a law, a bill that bans teenagers from talking on their cell phones while they're driving. It's an important bill. And it is kind of, I guess, strange when we need a law for things like that. But these are realities that are present. When the rest of us older people were teenagers, we didn't have cell phones to distract us. We had other things. But I guess when common sense doesn't prevail, the law has to. But as I thought about that, I kind of came to a realization that I think people tend to live their Christian life a lot of times like distracted drivers. You know, they're not actively and decisively focused on the important. They're not really engaged in where they're going. They're distracted by other frivolous things. They're preoccupied with other matters of life, and they're ignoring what really is the most important thing, where you're headed in your commitment to the Lord. But at some point, the distraction is going to end up in a collision. There's going to be a crash if it continues that way, and it usually does. And the result is grief and anger and pain of some type. So to remember your Creator simply means to be actively and decisively focused on God as your guide of your life. And don't get preoccupied with all the frivolous things. There's a time to be involved in the frivolous things, but not always. Or to put it more simply, take God seriously while you're young. Take God seriously while you're young. Commit yourself to Him while you're young. Don't keep putting it off and say, well, I've got other things in my life that are going on right now. I'll deal with that later down the road, you know, when I get married or when I get a job or something like that. No, because the more you put it off, the easier it is to keep putting it off. Before you know it, those years are gone. And you don't want to have to look back on a life of regret or have memories you're ashamed of. And so the other key word here in verses 1 and 2, he uses it twice. It's the word before. Commit yourself to your Creator while you're young, before these evil days come, before the sun and the light are gone. Now, what's he describing there? He's talking about old age now. So we turn our attention for a moment here to those who are older. And as Solomon goes on in these following verses to describe for us what it's like when you get old. Now, those of you who are, how do I put this gently, who fit into many of these descriptions, you already know what it's like. So he's telling young people, this is what's going to happen. So I'm just going to kind of slide down through these descriptions. I don't have a lot of time to comment greatly on them, but you can just follow in your Bible if you would like. There'll be no slides on these. But the first one, verse 2, I think just describes old age in general, and he describes this very oddly. The sun and the light and the moon and the stars are darkened and the clouds return after the rain. I thought we look forward to the sun coming out after the rain, but no, at your age, the clouds come back after the rain. Oh, the rain is good. It watered everything. Oh, it's cloudy again. That's kind of the way it feels. I heard on Fox News just a little over a week ago, just as I was getting ready to head out for work and I was going to turn the TV off, and they were mentioning this study. I don't know where it came from or who the experts are that came up with this, but they said that it's been determined that old age officially begins at age 59. I said, what? Get out of here. I just turned 60 this last summer, and I do not feel like an old man other than my facial hair turned gray and my feet hurt, but the rest of me, I'm pretty good. I think I got good mileage left on me, I think. So I don't know if that study is right or not. But number 2, in verse 3, there's a few of them he lists here. He says, the watchmen of the house tremble. What are the watchmen of the house? Well, I think since he talks about trembling, he's probably referring to the hands and the arms. There are watchmen, kind of. What's our first line of defense in an attack? Arms, you know. We stop them or whatever we have to do. If we fall down, what do? We put our arms out, our hands to break the fall, and we break our arm in the process. But I guess it's better than breaking your neck. But the watchmen, they begin to tremble when you get older. And you know what that's like. I have issues with that myself, but I don't think it's age. It's caffeine and something else. But when I'm trying to put a screwdriver onto a screw, I can't get it on, and I'm at the point where I have to use two hands on a screwdriver to get it on the screw, and it's frustrating. Verse 3 also says, mighty men stoop. Men who are strong and healthy, Their legs get weak eventually. The back gets weak. They stoop over. They get shorter. And then he says, the grinding ones stand idle because they are few. You know what that is. That's your teeth. The grinders. They're fewer than they used to be. That's why the old saying is right. Be true to your teeth and they won't be false to you. So that's your word of advice today. Verse 3, the windows grow dim. That's where eyesight begins to fail. Can't see as well. Cataracts develop and everything is cloudy. Now back in Solomon's day, they didn't have surgery to remove those cataracts. Well, when you get your cataract, you can't drive your Cadillac anymore. That's the biggest problem with them. But, the eyes grow dim. You can't see as well. You know, I can't see that screen up there. I need the hymn book so I can get my bifocals right. That's good. That's all right. That's why when we do hymns, we put the number up there. But I guess you can't read the number anyway, so what's the point? I guess we'll do some about that, okay? I'm sorry. Well, the next one, verse 4. The doors on the street are shut and the sound of the grinding mill is low. What's that? Hearing. Can't hear as well. It's like the doors are shut and people are talking behind the doors. Can't hear them. Speak up! You know? They just have a bad sound system in this place, you know, because I can't hear. What'd he say? You know? Louder? Can you speak up? It's a hearing. It goes. My wife keeps telling me my hearing is going bad. It's not. But I think that's what she said. I don't know. In verse 4 also, he said, one will rise at the sound of the bird. Old people get up early, don't they? They get up and the birds start singing. They're up at 4 a.m. because they went to bed at 7 p.m. And that's part of the problem, but even if they stayed up, they don't sleep well and they're up early in the morning. Verse 4 also says, the daughters of song will sing softly. I think that's referring to voices getting weaker. Can't sing like you used to. Jean sang such a beautiful song. Her voice is so smooth. I love Jean's voice. It's a soothing, calm voice. But you know, one of these days, unfortunately, Jean isn't going to be able to sing like she did. Her voice is going to get weaker. And she's going to get up to sing, and we're going to be sitting out there thinking, she needs to hang it up. You know? I mean, you hear professional singers, you know, those who are the popular recording artists, you know, who made records and everything else, and now they're in their 80s and they're singing and they're trying to, and you're thinking, oh, please, don't torture us any longer. But now some of them are fortunate. They have a good, strong voice when they're pretty old, but it doesn't happen to everybody. Now, Gene, don't worry about it. You've got a lot of singing left ahead of you. Verse 5, men are afraid of high places, fear of heights. I think that's what he's talking about. I know the older I get, the less desire I have to go up on a roof anymore. I will if I have to, but I wear shoes that I know are going to grip, and I'm not comfortable. I don't like walking around if it's too steep. I'm glad my house is a single-story house. If it was two-story, I would never go to the roof. Getting up there to do something or clean my gutters, that's about it. But, you know, I look back at the days when I was a volunteer fireman and all the climbing we used to do in the heights and walking on roof edges and everything else that was involved in that, and the high ladders we'd have to put up and practice carrying this dummy down. It was a fake thing, not a real person. But, but nowadays, I don't have any desire for that. Or maybe just talking about you as you get older, places that were not really high are high for you now. You go somewhere and, oh, there's steps. Oh, I don't know. There's like 8 steps there. I don't think I can do this. You know? Or maybe you get really bad and you're walking along with your wife and, well, there's a curb. I don't know if we can get over that. That looks high. You know? Well, okay, I'm being naughty here. I'm sorry. Verse 5, afraid of terrors on the road. Don't like to drive at night. That's good. And that's all right. But, you know, I'm sure that in Solomon's day, yeah, they were well aware of the dangers and the inability to fend for themselves. But I think, too, we're afraid of the terrors on the road when our kids are driving. You know, even as adults, it doesn't change. You know, I worry about my adult daughters on the road. And especially if they're traveling a distance. When our daughter, Jennifer, is driving from Ohio with her boys and driving home, I'm worried sick. I'm praying all the way, and I don't rest easy till I know she's home and she's safe. Well, that's the way it is for us, and we get more anxious about those things. Verse 5, he says, the almond tree blossoms. That's when your hair turns gray and white. That's what almond trees do. When, you know, sometimes we'll run into somebody that's like our age, somebody we haven't seen for several years. We'll have a nice conversation, then when we're done, we're leaving, I'll say something to Beth. Do you notice how old they look? And they're probably saying the same thing about us. Do you see how aged they look, man? Well, verse 5, the grasshopper drags himself along. And I'll think about the grasshopper in the summertime. He's flitting and bouncing around like these spring-loaded legs, you know, like we all did when we were young. We could run and jump and climb and dance. But at the end of the season, the grasshopper gets real lethargic, and he just drags himself along the ground. He doesn't have the strength anymore. I remember the days when I was a boy walking and trying to keep up with my dad, and he had long legs and just keep going, and I'd run to keep up with him. And then there was a point in his 80s when that reversed itself. And I was slowing down to wait for him. And he was moving pretty slow. And then he got to where he had one of those walkers, like a lot of you have here, with the wheels on it, with a little seat. And he could sit down whenever he needed to. It wasn't always the most convenient time for him to sit down. But when his legs got tired, that's when he would do it. One time we were going up to... I had to take him to Breton Village to the drugstore to get something, and we got out of the car, and we're going down through the parking lot to the driving lane. I turn around and look, and he's sitting there in his little bench. Dad, what are you doing? You're right in the traffic lane here. We got to move. No, it's okay. Just resting my legs for a minute. No, this is right where the cars come. The car's going to come around the corner. I'm okay. If I see a car coming, I'll get up. Dad, you're so slow. If you try to get up, it's going to be way too late. Just, we need to get over to the side or into the parking spot here to do this. Well, then number 5, my Bible says, and the caper berry is ineffective. What in the world is that? Well, if you have an NIV, it says, desire is no longer stirred. I'm going to let you figure that one out on your own. I'm just thankful that that one's the last one to go on the list. Because verse 5, he talks about your funeral. The end of verse 5, for man goes to his eternal home while mourners go about in the street. So when you hear an older person say it ain't fun getting old, I want you to know they're telling the truth. They know what they're talking about. The body reaches a point where it can't do all the things it used to be, at least not as quick as it used to be or as well. I heard about a man in his 80s who was still playing golf and enjoyed it very much. He was a good golfer, but his problem was his eyesight was bad. The windows were dim. He could see well enough to see the ball on the tee and hit it, but he couldn't see where it went. So he always had these couple other guys that he played with, and they would spot the ball for him. So they could see where it went, and they would show him where the ball was, and he'd hit it, and then they'd take him to where it went next. And one day he showed up at the clubhouse, and the guys weren't there. They didn't show up. And he wanted to play golf real bad. And as time went on, he was getting angrier, and he was walking around the clubhouse stewing and complaining and getting angrier. And finally, another man came over and said, what's the problem? I see you're visibly upset. He explained the story about his eyesight and these guys that watched the ball for him didn't show up and he really wanted to play. And this man, who was actually older than this gentleman was, said, well, you know, God's been really gracious and good to me. I, at my age, in my 90s, I actually have 20/20 vision. So I'd be happy to go with you and spot your ball for you. And that made the guy's day. They got in the cart, got the first tee. First man got up there with his bad eyesight. He hit the ball off the tee, and it sailed just as nice as it could be, as far as it could go. Just a tremendous, powerful hit. And he turned to the older man. He said, "Did you see my ball? See where it went?" He said, "I saw it come right off the tee. I saw it go through the air. I saw it land. I watched. I followed it all the way till it stopped rolling. It just was off the edge into the taller grass, just that little tall enough grass." "Oh, wonderful. Let's go. Where's the ball?" The guy said, "I can't remember." Well, to sum it up, I've gone over time. Solomon basically says to young people, rejoice. Enjoy your youth and all of its activities. Because this is a time of life that's a gift of God for you, and he wants you to enjoy it. But here's the deal. Be careful. Because you will have to answer to God for the things you do. And by the way, there's going to also come a time when your youth will be gone and responsibilities will increase. And you'll be old before you know it. You won't be able to do the things you used to do. And then you'll die. But if you walk with God now, while you're young, and keep walking with him all through your life, you'll never, ever be sorry. And when you're old, you'll be free of regret. And you'll have a kind spirit and an inner peace that is indescribable. And you'll be thanking God for each new day that he gives you, and you'll be praising him all the way across the threshold of heaven. And the formula is simple, as he said at the end there at verse 13. The conclusion is, when all has been heard, is fear God and keep his commandments. It's so easy. Just fear God, keep his commandments. As the old gospel song says, when we walk with the Lord in the light of his word, what a glory he sheds on our way. When we do his good will, he abides with us still and with all who will trust and obey. And as the chorus says, trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and obey. That's the happiness God wants you to enjoy, and that's the best kind of happiness there is. Amen. Father, thank you for the time we've spent here in your word. Thank you for the gift of laughter and joy.